Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. In this first edition of Counselor Audio Source, I interview Dr. John McFadden from the University of South Carolina. Dr. McFadden will be speaking with us about multicultural, transcultural counseling, his stylistic model of counseling, and his role as the Benjamin E. Mays Chair at the University of South Carolina. This interview took place in October 2005 while we both attended the South Carolina Society for Adlerian Psychology. Hello, I'm Dr. Marty Gentius with Counselor Audio Source, and with me today is Dr. John McFadden, and we're happy to have him here to talk about transcultural counseling and his stylistic model. Dr. McFadden, would you please tell our listeners to Counselor Audio Source a little bit about your background, scholarly work, current position?
Well, my background starts, of course, with my childhood in Wilmington, North Carolina, where I was born and reared, went to public school, took off from there and went to college at Winston-Salem State University, where I majored actually in teacher education and worked for a while after that in the Statesville City, Iredell County Public Schools. From there, pursued my master's degree, starting at University of Wisconsin in Madison. Following that, of course, was Temple University in Philadelphia with a couple of other courses at places such as Miami University in Ohio and Columbia University in New York City. That master's degree allowed me then to be education administrator by training after my experience in the schools, Statesville, Iredell County. I received a position, of course, in my hometown of Wilmington, where I worked for 4 years as a teacher, sort of a counselor, but more teacher than counselor, actually. From there, went off to the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, where I worked in the elementary schools for a period of, actually, for 4 years. That was a great experience as well. As a matter of fact, from that experience came a lot of recognition by way of state and national awards in the area of teaching. I decided to pursue counselor education when I came to the University of South Carolina to work in the School Desegregation Consulting Center as a staff specialist. And from there, of course, I kind of stumbled into counselor education and have been doing that ever since with a lot of satisfaction, actually, matter of fact, a lot of pleasure. And I describe myself as being an educator in three dimensions. Of course, in counseling, in teaching, and also in administration. So the three hats that I wear, I use them hopefully to the advantage of my students, not only at the University of South Carolina, but other places as well. And I can talk a little later about my experience in the global arena. The area of transcultural counseling, of course, has emerged over the last few years, and if you'd like to know more about that, I'd be happy to discuss it.
Sure. Could you tell us a little bit about the transcultural counseling, how you defined it or how it's defined?
Sure. The term transcultural counseling, I rather think that I coined it as a result of hearing a lot about cross-cultural counseling and multicultural counseling, bilateral counseling, a lot of different areas. And whereas all of those terms have special meaning, none of them seem to have really communicate what I thought counseling in a global context should be about. So transcultural counseling has been coined somewhat as a result of some work that I did in the United Kingdom some years ago. And it simply translates into meaning momentum, change, evolution, growth, progress. Latin term trans, which does translate into meaning momentum, upward mobility, was used for that purpose. So transcultural counseling to me is an expression that is used to define an area in the helping professions which allow people to transcend differences and blend cultures into sort of a monolithic paradigm without diffusing or without minimizing unique differences that exist in individual cultures. So you will see in a lot of my writing, my research, my lectures, my consultation, the term transcultural counseling. As a matter of fact, I use it also for just general sheer communication. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be counselors necessarily, just the idea of communicating with people in a transcultural context. Or I take it to teacher education institutions, teaching young boys and girls, men and women, adults, in a transcultural way. So I like the term very much. It feels good. It feels natural for me. And most people that I work with seem to respond in affirmative way to that term.
How does you've published Transcultural Counseling, your book, now in the second edition.
Yes.
How does transcultural counseling, in your view, differ or fit with the term that's used commonly in counseling in terms of multicultural counseling? How is transcultural counseling different, additive, or?
Sure, good. I'm glad you asked that question, because multicultural counseling is probably the term that we hear most of all, and it has its place. I think most people understand what it means, and I have no objection per se to the term. But for me personally, it feels better to use the term transcultural counseling. And the reason why I say that is in multicultural counseling, just a sheer term multinational, multi-global, multi-personal, multi-familiar, multi-institutional, multi-anything simply means just what it says. It's many different components to the puzzle. And when you talk about multicultural counseling, if you're not careful, we may have individuals, for fear of wanting to deal with the real McCoy, essentially, they may take multicultural counseling and put all the facets in there, like throwing them into a big pot, stirring it up, and coming out with something that's rather difficult to define, or which may not have a very general or generic place to go. Whereas transcultural counseling, by my definition, simply means that you do have these facets. They do blend, but they also, if I may use the expression, transcend. Mm-hmm. They go to a different level. There is momentum. There is change. There is progress. There is hope. There's faith. There is positive growth. There is, venue for future development. And I like it because when you talk about transportation, just using that term, that's carrying you someplace, is it not? Mm-hmm. If you talk, for example, about transnational, we're talking about nations across the world that are trying to do something to bring about world peace. So I think for our work that I'm doing, and hopefully the work that many of you are doing, it can be described in a very constructive way as transcultural work. And I'm hoping that more and more people will begin to take hold of that, because there is a lot of, I think, future in it. And as you well know, my interest and background in architecture has a lot to do with building and construction. Mm-hmm. For the future. So it's like building a foundation and taking that foundation to level one, level two, level three, and to a level, I'll call it, of cultural infinity.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Dr. John McFadden on Counselor Audio Source today, talking about transcultural counseling. And as you speak about building in different levels, could you talk a little bit about your model, the stylistic model of transcultural counseling?
Sure. The stylistic counseling for effective work, whether it be in a transcultural context or some other form, started roughly 25 plus years ago when I felt a need to help individuals understand, as we were moving from dual to unitary schools in the United States, moving from dual to unitary thinking so that people will be more on one accord, to take my background and interest in architecture, which is design work, which has a lot to do with form and cubicles and, if you will, a whole notion of graphics, to help individuals see how they can take their own individual areas of interest, their own areas of specialization, and utilize it within a framework. So I came up with the idea of the term stylistic, which simply means a form of working with people, whether it be in a school or community or an agency setting, whereby they can plug into that form whatever may be their unique methodology for teaching or counseling. So some people may have an interest very much in cognitive behavioral work. Others may be very interested, for example, in work that's relating, for example, to Adlerian context, or they may be interested in something more that relating, for example, to the Glasser's work or TA's work, or they may be interested in Rogers' work, any number of individuals who are traditional theorists, and taking their approach to teaching and counseling and put it within this cubicle. So if you can imagine with me a cube, like a large cube of ice, if you will, overflowing, and look at that cube in a context, so it has three layers, a foundation layer, a middle layer, and an upper layer. And those three layers, as you may be aware, I call the bottom layer CH, cultural historical. The middle layer I call PS, psychosocial. And the third layer I call SI, scientific ideological. In a nutshell, those three dimensions simply mean the culture and history of any particular client group that you may be working with, individually or collectively. The second layer has a lot to do with the psychological and social dimensions and interplay of that particular client or students with others. Mm-hmm. And the third layer has a lot to do with the methodology, the actual application of teaching, learning, counseling. So those three layers, moving in an ascending fashion, represent stylistic counseling. Now, within that, as you know, there are various cubicles, mm-hmm. and I can talk about that if you like at some point, but each of those layers, the CH has nine cubicles, the SI has nine cubicles, and the SI has nine cubicles, and you can move in a vertical fashion, in a cubicle column, I call it, or you can move horizontally in a cubicle row, or you can move diagonally in a cubicle vertex throughout the model until you reach the SI dimension, which is a scientific ideological dimension to counseling.
So the idea for a counselor then who's trying to apply the stylistic model would be for them to explore the client's world in their cultural historical and their history, and then explore areas of their world in terms of their psychosocial, how they think about themselves and also how they relate to people in their world, and then explore that final level, the scientific ideological, in terms of the things that are currently going on with them, the problems around them in their world, and the things that are influencing the immediate situation for them.
Very much so. So if you have a client, say Mary Jones, who appears in your office, and she presents to you a situation that relates, for example, to her feeling a sense of oppression, whatever that oppression may be coming from, your job as a counselor would be to explore with Shirley Jones, Mary Brown, Joe Dagley, whatever the name may be, explore with that individual the context, the cultural context that is the basis for the oppression. And it may become in the form of questions, situations, it's just exploratory. Absolutely. And pulling that off, you will begin to get a sense of the cultural historical foundation of Mary Jones's oppression. We'll give you some kind of a context within which, because you know more than likely we're not going to be of her cultural background. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have her history. Absolutely. But we have to appreciate and encourage her to explore that. If we are effective, and hopefully we will, and it may take more than one session, incidentally, but it may take only part of a session, but then you would be interested in then beginning to look at, well, are there any forces, any social forces within your life, Mary Jones? This is the PS now. Any social forces within your background that are impinging on you psychologically or socially, that are impeding your growth and progress to the point where your oppression is being magnified. If, as you work with Mary Jones, you see that that's beginning to come into play, she's opening up, she's responding, she's mm-hmm. following through on assignments that you agree upon, then, of course, you can begin to look at the SI, which, of course, could be some alternatives. I'll call them meaningful alternatives that she may want to examine, which will move her out of that oppressive state, which will move her beyond that state of looking at some of these social forces into a very magnanimous position where she is empowered, where she feels empowered, when that sense of empowerment begins to activate itself, so those meaningful alternatives will allow her to rise above the oppression, rise above the social forces, and get into a positive context where she will become, hopefully, a new person at a different time for a different future.
You've been a faculty member at University of South Carolina how long now?
Well, I've done 3 decades there, and you may want to add another one or two, but at least for 3 decades.
Well, I bring that to the point because I'm sure you've heard this question before from students many, many times, and I hear it too from students in terms of wanting to develop a more sense and more effectiveness as a multicultural counselor. What kind of suggestions do you have for counselors who want to be more effectively multicultural or transculturally?
I think that if students were to present that question to me, I would ask them, would they be willing to sit and have a conversation? And the conversation would go something like this. Could you talk about the rationale that you can explain why you want to do this? What is the motivating force? Where is it coming from? And then they would say, well, I really want to do it because I think it's just the right thing to do. All right, so if you do become multiculturally proficient and efficient, what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to go? What difference is it going to make? Are you going to become a better scholar? Are you going to become a better teacher? Are you going to become a better researcher? Or even more importantly, are you going to be a better service provider? I would ask them to explore that. But you see, once that initial conversation takes place, I really would take them through that stylistic counseling model by way of conversation.
So have a conversation around their own cultural historical
balance.
And what kind of forces they had from their own history that might be then influencing the psychosocial, the way in which
they're... You see, so that they would get into a position of feeling... like they're doing some self-examination of who they really are, that they begin to look internally and ask themselves about the internal world. As you said, for example, examine or play back some of their stories, some of their early recollections, some of their motivations for wanting to do. One of the things that I would do myself, for me, I play back very quickly. The Miss Telfair story when I was just a third grader, as you well know.
So and, if we're going to talk about your cultural historical, you'd tell about Miss Telfair.
Absolutely. No question about it. I'd never, ever want anyone to forget about the mended bowl and how it was broken. And now it's been mended by this person, third grade, for life. Because even though she wasn't a counselor, she was doing counseling kinds of things with this little kid who was looking for something better in life. Mm-hmm. So back to the students who may want to become a better person, want to become a multicultural counselor, I would say you could look at several things. One of them, of course, I would say spend a lot of time on your CH, on you. And you can do that yourself. You can do that by reading. You can do that by analyzing some critique tapes. You can do that by, I think, very well finding a sort of a pen pal, a conversation pal, a cultural pal, where they can do some exchanging and some modeling and some using the internet, just doing a lot, and putting themselves in a position where they really are uncomfortable for a while, and see why they are uncomfortable, and what does this all mean, and what are you going to do about it, you see. The other thing which they could do, I believe, would be very critically, selectively, and I would say very selectively, identify seminars, workshops, courses, institutions, professors that you think you can learn from. But I very carefully say be rather strategic and critically selective about doing that, because everything that glitters isn't gold, as we know. Everything that's written isn't worth reading, as we know. Every video that's been put on the market isn't worth seeing, and we know. So therefore, the critical thought that needs to go into that, and if you're not capable of doing that, then you find someone whom you have confidence in so doing. And there are enough theorists, there are enough counselor educators, there are enough authors who may not be in the Encyclopedia Britannica, who may not appear in APA's log of who's who, but they are darn good people who have a knowledge. I call these some of our non-traditional theorists who have wonderful theories, who have different wonderful models, who have wonderful approaches to multicultural, transcultural counseling, and who can be exceptionally helpful to these persons aspiring to become multicultural effective. I would say in addition to that, get a hold of some vignettes on the market that have been written by various folk, trying out some of those and doing some modeling, some role playing, some critiquing, some sessions, and I think that will begin to help anybody who's sincere about change, about being a better multicultural counselor, a better transcultural professor in accomplishing their individual goals.
We're speaking on Counselor Audio Source with Dr. John McFadden. I'm Dr. Marty Gensius, and our topic today is transcultural counseling and some of the work that Dr. McFadden has done in that field over the many decades. I've got a sort of a prophetic question to ask you. Where does the counseling profession, what's the next step for the counseling profession? Where do they need to go to advance this idea of transculturalism or even multiculturalism?
That is a huge challenge, but one that is attainable to the counseling profession. But I think it's a serious one. It's serious because of the world that we're living in. Look at Katrina. Look at Rita. Look at all of the situations that we have been involved in. Hugo, 9/11. Now, those are crises types of incidents. But then we can also look at elected officials. We can look, for example, at musicians, theatrical performers, authors, poets, literary individuals, just the common man or woman walking up and down the street, the boys and girls for whom we do have a responsibility for in present and in the future. The counseling profession, I think, I would ask that they begin to do their self-examination of their own profession. Coming out of the box and looking at where they have been, where they are, and really asking themselves, their students, who are very important, their clients, who are very important, their community, that's very important, about what needs exist. Identifying those, putting them in some context, and then asking ourselves, well, what do we have that's already on the table that doesn't need to be fixed? It's already there. It's good. Finding out the best of what we have, the best persons who are there, the best resources, the visions, and asking yourselves, is it, quotes, politically, culturally, indigenously correct? If the answer to all of those is yes, which I would question, then keep on doing the same thing you're doing before. I would rather think, I cannot think myself personally of a program that I know of that's doing all of that and doing it correctly and well as I vision the future. So we ask ourselves then, where have we been? What is needed? what do we have to offer, and then sorting that out almost in terms of a force field analysis. The best that we have, preserving it. That which is shaken needs to be questioned. Why and where and what and when. And that which we're not doing very well. Curriculum changes, development, I think it's necessary to look at. You see, this idea of offering a transcultural counseling course is a start. It's much better than what we've had. Offering, as you know, at your institution, at mine, an introductory transcultural counseling course, an advanced transcultural counseling, fine. Someone would argue that it should be somehow interspersed throughout the curriculum and all of the courses. The idea is good, but who's going to do it? Do we have individuals committed enough and who have the background that we really can entrust our programs, our students, and our profession into the hands of everybody? I don't know that we are. We need to talk about assessment, about, of course, theory, talk about practice, about supervision, the idea of group work, the idea, for example, of career development, the idea, for example, of professional development, teaching, learning, practice, so many different components to it. But I would love to entertain the idea of sitting with some colleagues and talking about curriculum development and what kind of program we could look at in terms of change. I think that for counseling professions in the future, and it could be for others as well, but since we're speaking about counseling, I'll address that. For counseling professions in the future, a revolution, a reformation, a reconfiguration, a resurrection, a revival, a renewal, all those things are critical components to the future of the counseling profession worldwide.
You haven't spoken, and I want to bring to light to our listeners, about the Benjamin E. Mays Chair, and that you have sat in that position as Benjamin E. Mays Chair at South Carolina, and that's so tied into the spirit of who you are and the idea of transcultural work.
Yeah, you touched my heart when you asked that question, because in 1988, after a number of years doing all sorts of things, I was asked by President of the University of South Carolina to assume the chair called the Benjamin E. Mays Distinguished Professorship, the first for an African-American scholar in the history of the University of South Carolina. We're talking about 1801. So that was quite a challenge and opportunity and offer to move out of my senior vice president's position for international intercultural affairs and professional development to a full-time faculty position of a chaired professor. I did accept it, thanks to my wonderful wife, Dr. Grace Joy McFadden, who encouraged me to do that. She had more insight into that future than I did, as a matter of fact. And by assuming the chair, I had an opportunity to try to wear some awfully big shoes, the shoes of the scholar, my mentor, Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, former president for over three decades, Morehouse College in Atlanta, a native of South Carolina, Greenwood County, who actually was the grandson of slaves himself, and who pulled himself up by his bootstraps through Bates College, University of Chicago, Howard University in Washington, through the seminary school there of religious studies, and became actually Dr. Martin Luther King's mentor, teaching him nonviolence, teaching a lot of different people the same thing, Andrew Young and Maynard Jackson and many, many different fine young persons, through Lerone Bennett from Ebony Magazine, and I can name hundreds of others. But the chair professorship at the University of South Carolina has been in operation since 1988, and we've taken it, I think, to some different heights. We have established a Benjamin Elijah Mays Academy for Leadership Development, where we teach, learn, train young people in 8th through the 12th grade for leadership development in various careers on a monthly basis. And over 700 of them now have graduated from the academy and are scattered throughout the world. We have the Benjamin Elijah Mays Lecture Series, where a renowned person comes to campus each year and delivers a lecture. We have archived all of this, by the way, if anyone is interested in learning more about it. We have the Benjamin Elijah Mays Research Associate Program, where we fund students who are working on the doctorate at university and help them with tuition and stipends and things of that sort, so that they can also learn, write, mentor. And as a matter of fact, here as we speak, we have students here at this conference, the South Carolina Conference on Ehlerian Psychology at Myrtle Beach, who are here because of that program. And we have a number of other outreach kinds of things. But the chaired professorship is one which I have adored working in, trying to fill the shoes of Dr. Mays, and it's a sense of gratitude because, as you know, he often said, whatever you do in life, do it so well that no man or woman, dead or alive or yet to be born, can do it any better. He challenges us to be excellent at whatever we do and leave no stones unturned, a message I believe to my colleagues in counseling, in education in general, to citizens of this world, and to young people who are aspiring to be citizens and fine adults as they proceed through life and through their careers.
I've got one final question for you. How do you see your work advancing in the future? Where do you think it's going to go? Stylistic, transcultural?
Well, I'm encouraged, Dr. Jensis, by the motivation and the interest that you have shown in this model, because I've seen that, and I've worked with you, and I'm very, very, very pleased to see that. I feel like if there's any one person who's going to carry it forward, I have confidence that you will do that. There are other people who are beginning to get a taste of it here and a taste of it there who are interested. Our good friend Dr. Chaz Durant at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville would be another example of it. My former colleague Dr. Harold Cowan used to be with the HGI Institute in Atlanta, would have had he been still alive. We have individuals, for example, like students who have graduated from the counseling program who are now in various fields. But I would want, and I'm encouraged by it, because you're talking about 25 years ago and this seed was just planted, and I guess I thought it was on the shelf, but it's becoming more and more prevalent and more seemingly appropriate for where we are today in our field. So with the publications that you and I have done, with the papers that we and I have written, with the conferences that we have attended, I see that stylistic counseling in the future, if it continues with the momentum that it's gaining now, it's going to continue to have a tremendous impact. I've got two consultants, as you know, coming up within the next month at various institutions that are asking and crying for their faculty members to be exposed to the model. And I think that it has served as a basis not only for a model, but individuals tell me that, McFadden, you know, stylistic counseling, that's a theory. And I don't want to be so arrogant as to believe it is a theory, because theories take, I think, decades and decades and decades, probably more than that, scores of years to develop. And we haven't done as much research on it as I would like, but I would be very open and receptive to seeing someone do more of a dissertation, a master's thesis, or an EDS paper on the model itself. And so I see in the future that it's going to continue to have widespread implications across the board, not only in education, but in the fields of international studies, government, politics, linguistics, even, if you will, in the language area. One only has to look at some of these 27 cubicles. And as you know, incidentally, each of those 27 cubicles is subdivided into 9 other cubicles. So technically, we have 9 times 27 subcubicles. And for this purpose of our conversation here, we'll just address the 27 cubicles on the 3 dimensions called stylistic counseling for effectiveness in our field of counselor education, particularly with an emphasis on transculturalism.
We're going to have on Counselor Audio Source on the website a link which will give our listeners the opportunity to look at the bibliography of your work so they can go back and get the original sources and take a look at that information and get a better understanding of the stylistic model and transcultural counseling. Is there any final words you'd like to share with folks about transcultural counseling? Or?
Well, I would just say that look at the term transcultural counseling, accept its prefix, trans, to understand that it's a challenge to me, it's a challenge to you, it's a challenge to the world to get on this particular motorized vehicle and ride it until the end. And I don't envision an end. I just see it's continuing to go on and on and on, because this locomotive has just gotten started. And we're counting on all of you with the diesel fuel, with whatever fuel we can find to allow this particular locomotive continue to move along. Because again, one of my good quotes from Dr. Mays simply says that you have to dream. If you don't dream, you have to think. If you don't think, you have to uphold. If you don't uphold, you have to prophesy. If you don't prophesy, you have to reach for the stars. And if you don't reach for the stars, if you don't prophesy, if you don't dream, by his definition, you and I have sinned. And we don't want to be accused by anyone, particularly one who holds power over us, as allowing our lives to be lived in sin. And I thank you very much for the opportunity of speaking with you. I would be happy to have further dialogue with you about the agencies as time and opportunities permit.
You've been listening to an interview with Dr. John McFadden on transcultural counseling, the stylistic model, his work as Benjamin E. Mays Chair, and some of his thoughts about the future of transcultural, multicultural counseling. This is Dr. Marty Gentius for Counselor Audio Source.
You've just heard an interview with Dr. John McFadden about transcultural counseling, produced by Dr. Marty Gentius at Kent State University. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorAudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.